Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock. And if it's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock and you happen to be listening to the Heritage Radio Network, you're listening to me, Phil Colicchio, bringing you the business of the business. That is the program here on the Heritage Radio Network, which explores the business side of the hospitality industry. And if you're a regular listener, you know that sometimes we talk about hotels, sometimes we talk about restaurants. Sometimes we talk about chefs, sometimes we talk about yachts, we talk about hospitality, and we talk about the business component of hospitality. I like to say we don't care as much about how the parsley looks on the plate, we care more how it costs and how that affects the bottom line. If you miss this program live, every once in a while someone misses it live, you could just go to the terrific Heritage Radio Network website and click on the icons for the business shows and click onto the business of the business, and you can listen to any one of the 40 or 50 shows that we've been fortunate enough to bring you. You can also download us on iTunes if you are so inclined. Okay, that business is out of the way. Let's get down to the business of the business today. I'm excited to do this show today. I'm excited because the reason I can do the show today is because the guy sitting next to me pulled off a turnaround that I think a lot of people in the restaurant industry would, if they got to see all of the bottom line items, would say, wow, that's it is highly improbable, if not impossible, that you could turn this thing around. But he did turn it around. He turned it around both financially and he turned it around aesthetically. I'm sitting with Kevin Spraga, Chef Kevin Spraga of Philadelphia. Kevin, I want to say hi before we get into the heaps of praise I'm going to lay upon you.
Yeah, I'll take all the praise I can get, Phil. Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming up, because it takes guts, in my estimation, for somebody in your business to sit down here and talk about what you're going to talk about. You're going to talk about the mistakes that you made that almost buried the restaurant that bears your name.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how those mistakes, I guess, really sort of came to become, they came to be your friends.
Right.
You had to recognize them. You had to feed them a little bit before you could beat them back.
Mm-hmm.
You had to really
mm-hmm.
understand them. Kevin was on the show in 2012. September.
Yep,
2012. To talk about his restaurant, Spraga, in Philadelphia, which is at the corner of Pine and Broad Streets in Philadelphia. And again, those of you who listen to the show know that I view Philadelphia as really a laboratory right now of great food and great food concepts. And Kevin took a really big chance. I recall on the last show, Kevin, that I said your career was ass backwards. You became
yeah.
famous. You became famous before you owned a restaurant.
This is true.
And that's because you won
mm-hmm.
Season 7, I believe, of a show called Top Chef.
That's correct.
Which is very popular in the food community, I understand.
Yes, it is.
Right. But by winning that show, that gave you an opportunity to go ahead and not only gain some of the financing, but gain the confidence to go out and say, hey, my food is good enough. My style is good enough. I can make a dent here in Philadelphia.
Well, the whole purpose of me going on the show was to open a restaurant. It wasn't to be a celebrity. It wasn't to be on TV. It was for no other reason than to open my own place.
You know, you're probably the only person who can say that and say it with intellectual honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the show has been it's been more of a vehicle
mm-hmm.
for food personalities than for accomplished chefs. Fair?
Agreed.
Okay.
Totally agreed.
All right. So you pulled that off. You opened Sparaga in October of 2011 in a terrific space,
mm-hmm.
in a developing part
mm-hmm.
of Philadelphia. You had all the hopes in the world. You hired a team. You hired a general manager. I'm sure that if he hears this, he'll be mad at me. There's one food critic in Philadelphia who matters.
Right.
That's the food critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yeah.
What did he think of your restaurant?
Mr. Craig LeBan was not a huge fan of it. It was very lukewarm, very mediocre. You know, we got a not so good 2-bell review. That's not good enough. You know, he was disappointed.
2 bells in the parlance of New York is
I would say
2 stars, 1 star.
1 star.
1 star.
1 star right. Here.
So that clearly was a disappointment to you.
Absolutely.
Devastation. Devastation to you.
Mm-hmm.
What did it do to your revenue generation?
Honestly, it really didn't do anything to my revenue.
Huh.
Philadelphia is an interesting market. You know, when we got that review, I thought that was it. It's over. Shut it down. Like, it's all been a waste. I lost. But honestly, it really didn't. Revenue didn't go up or go down. It really stayed flat.
Well.
Which was a problem.
Right.
Which we'll get to.
Right. You had a problem at the outset
mm-hmm.
with the bottom line
mm-hmm.
of the restaurant. And I'm so appreciative that you're going to really talk turkey about this. When we talk about the restaurant industry and we talk about one-off standalone restaurants, we talk about percentages of gross revenues that go toward expenses.
Absolutely.
And I think we've all, you know, if you listen to the show or if you talk to anybody who operates a restaurant, you've got to keep your costs of things in a predictable line,
mm-hmm.
right? So what was going on when you opened the restaurant that you thought you could control, that went out of control?
I mean, the number one thing, and you know, everyone struggles with it, and honestly, we still struggle with it. I have to battle it every single day, is labor. Labor is tough. That is the single hardest thing to manage. You know, people cost money.
Right. And people aren't dependable, are they?
No.
Right. And, you know, that is always, you know, you're not the only chef to sit here and say that that's the most challenging part of operating the restaurant. But your labor costs kind of got exacerbated by a bit of a management failure, right?
Yeah, honestly, and a management failure was my fault. You know, let's be honest. Let's be real. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't paying attention from the beginning. You know, when you open a restaurant on day one, all your systems have to be in place. Your QuickBooks has to be set up. You have to be looking at it from day one. All those little things need to take place. And we were open 5-6 months before I really started looking at the stuff. You know, once I started noticing there was no money left, it didn't make sense. Things didn't make sense.
Well, what was that? Did you trust somebody else with that part of the analysis?
Well, I was trusting someone else. I had hired an experienced bookkeeper, and he just couldn't keep up all the time. But honestly, it was really laziness on my part. And some of it was, you know, my own ego that, all right, well, I have this restaurant. I want 10 guys on the line. Well, maybe we're not busy enough for 10 guys on the line.
Man. So you've got investors in that restaurant.
Yes.
Fortunately, perhaps, a couple of the investors were demanding.
Yeah, they were very demanding. You know, one of the things that, honestly, most of the investors own their own business. So they understand business. And they really kind of coached me through some of the things. Although they may not be in the restaurant business, they understand business. And, you know, there was a couple different things that were said to me. But one that was really impactful was one guy said, all right, well, your top line is not high enough. You're not charging enough for your food. And then you're not making enough profit on the bottom either. And I knew that we had to really address both situations.
Well, when you say you weren't doing enough on top line. All right. So top line in my world is as much revenue as you can generate in the space that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
What was the original plan of the restaurant to generate top line? And how did you modify it once you realized, hey, I got to drive that more?
Yeah, one of the things we did, we increased the prices. So when we started, we had a
full... So you got a crappy review.
Right.
And you increased the prices. That's a brilliant strategy.
That's pretty crazy now that you say it like that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what happened, right?
That's exactly what happened.
So, okay. So there was a decision that got made, pretty high-risk decision.
Absolutely.
That says, we're going to raise the prices on a restaurant that was not well-received by the most influential critic in the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. I knew that people, not all people, but a lot of the people that were coming in were having a good time. And if they were having a good time and we were taking care of them, then we had something to grow off of. It wasn't like 100% of people were coming in and saying, what the hell is this?
Were they having a good time, do you think? Now, looking back,
yeah.
Again, we agreed we'd be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Were they having a good time because they were in the TV guy's restaurant? Or were they having a good time because they were enjoying the food and enjoying the... What do you think?
There were some that were enjoying the food, but the majority was the TV guy.
It had to feel weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I mean, he's like, you know, I've been lucky enough to be in the restaurant. I've seen you get poked and prodded.
Right.
You know, in a good way.
Yeah.
But by folks who are very interested in the celebrity component.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of the restaurant. And I know you tried to embrace it.
Well, you know, one thing that was really interesting on my way up here today, on the train, I'm sitting next to a guy, no conversation at all. We get off. He says, hey, you're Mr. Sprague. I said, yeah. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I ate at your second restaurant a couple weeks ago. It was fantastic. He didn't necessarily identify me with TV or Top Chef.
Terrific.
He identified me with a restaurant. And that, to me, was really important.
I'm talking to Kevin Sprague, the owner of Sparaga Restaurant in Philadelphia, winner of season 7 of Top Chef, which I think he's happy now to call a footnote in his career as opposed to the highlight.
Absolutely.
He's also the owner of a really well-received new restaurant in Philadelphia called the Fat Ham. He's got a lot of other things that are in the hopper, and they're only in the hopper because of the amazing financial turnaround that Kevin was able to accomplish with his namesake restaurant, Sparaga. Kevin, how important was the general manager decision that you made early on when you decided to open the restaurant and you just admitted that you were really sort of focused on what was happening on the line?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, here's one of the things is that, you know, when we were laying out the business plan, I had one thing in my mind. And when it came down time to it, I was between two managers, one that I could afford and one that I couldn't afford. Now, the one that I could afford was a buddy of mine. The one that I couldn't afford was also a buddy of mine. But, you know, I'm trying to save money. I'm trying to hit my budget. And, you know, I wasn't thinking bigger picture long term. So I went with the guy that I could afford. And honestly, great guy. I like him. A friend of mine. But he wasn't ready for it. He got swallowed up. He couldn't lead the team. And that was probably the biggest issue, is that he could not lead his team.
When you can't lead your team in that industry, it always occurs to me, at least, that it's not a character flaw. But what happens is that the team inevitably takes advantage of not having a whip-cracking type of leader.
Right.
Right.
You know, and he tried to crack the whip, but he didn't have the authority to do it and didn't have the respect to do it.
Was that his fault or your fault?
A little bit of both, because I second-guessed a lot of his things. And some of it was his own mistakes, just things that he did wrong, and they saw it and they ate him up.
So this sounds like incredible an incredible story of rookie mistakes that could have buried you, could have had those investors of yours being pretty unhappy with you.
Which they were.
And being a guy who might have to stuck off into the night.
Right.
As a television guy who didn't make it, right? Pretty ugly scenario.
Yeah, that would have been bad.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the turnaround occurred. We're going to talk about specifics. We're going to hear from, we're going to hear Kevin Sprague tell you about the tough decisions he had to make the change. And we might even eat a little pizza before we come back.
Yes, pizza.
All
pizza.
Right, thanks.
Can I come?
Red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse, and its own USDA inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, WhiteOakPastures.com.
Hey, check out WhiteOakPastures.com. That's a pretty amazing story of a 145-year-old family farm. I'm here with Kevin Sprague, the chef and owner of Sprague Restaurant in Philadelphia, the Fat Ham Restaurant in Philadelphia, and soon to be the...
No name yet.
No name yet restaurant in Philadelphia that will be on the corner of Broad and South Streets.
Yes, that's correct.
And a terrific new development called the
South Star Lofts.
South Star Lofts.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about that for you. How big is that space?
That one's 5,000 square feet.
Big old, big honking space for you.
I can't believe it. You know, the first one, 2,300 square feet, about 74 seats, including the bar. Fat Ham is only 1,000 square feet with about 45 seats. And this one's going to be about 144 seats and 5,000 square feet.
We're going to talk about that Fat Ham, and we're going to talk about the South Star Project on our show next week.
Sounds good.
I want on this week. I'm so interested in the turnaround that, you know, I come back to you and I say, all right, here we are. We're losing money. We're a year in. When you sat here, you were sort of saying, yeah, I'm hoping everything's going to be okay. You know, we're talking about how good the food, people are liking the food. But you were not being completely candid at that moment, were you?
No, not at all.
Man, what was going on?
No, I mean, there was issues. Obviously, issues with the food still, issues with the service, and issues with the management.
So what was it? What was the tipping point that made you say, I got to make significant change and I got to make it right now?
So one investor basically said, so when are we shutting down? When are we putting chains on the door? And that was a moment that it rocked my world in a bad way.
So you did what?
First thing I did was really like try to develop a plan, identify areas that were issues, service, quality and consistency of food, and then really managing it from the top down.
Now, you didn't go outside and hire a consultant, did you?
I did not.
You just sort of looked at it and said, I got to get my own ego in check?
Exactly. It was me. It was my fault. It was no one else's fault but mine. I can't blame anyone. I can't blame my general manager.
We got that part. You've beaten yourself with the whip enough. But that's not going to get us to the understanding moment, which is to say, I got to fire a couple of friends here.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, absolutely. Again, the general manager, there was a service issue. He couldn't lead. He couldn't manage. Great friend. Understood hospitality, but he had to go.
What kind of salary?
He made a good salary. He was in the $60,000
right.
range.
All right. So that goes.
Yeah,
right?
that goes.
How many of your line cooks?
There were a few that had to leave. There was two or three that had to go. They just weren't. They weren't making it.
I remember we had a conversation during a really tough period, and you asked me what I thought about it, and I said, "Well, the only person on the line who's not costing you anything is you."
Right.
You worked more, right?
Absolutely. I definitely had to work more. And the work changed, and that's the biggest thing. As chefs, we think, all right, well, we get to cook all the time. And that's okay if you have a really good business partner that runs the business, but I wasn't set up that way. I was set up where I was the business partner. It was me. And I not only had to focus on the food, but had to keep an eye on the service, find someone else that really understood service and hospitality, and then me, myself, really understand the financials.
And so what was the key? So you start to understand the financials.
Mm-hmm.
What particular management point made the difference between being unprofitable
mm-hmm.
and being profitable?
Well, there was a couple things. First thing was letting go of the manager. That was number one. He left, hired a new manager. Second thing was eliminating a management position that we had. We had to get rid of that salary. We just couldn't hold it. Third was really holding the managers responsible for the hourly labor, getting that as close to in line as possible, looking at the menu and engineering it to make sure our food costs and beverage costs all made sense, and then working our way down. Another thing, a big mistake that we made, we didn't spend enough in marketing and public relations. And that's the first thing everyone cuts, and that's the wrong thing to cut. You need people to know that you're out there, and you got to keep reminding them every single day.
You opened in October of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in the industry, that's like the primo time to open a restaurant.
Absolutely.
Couldn't be better. The summer doldrums don't affect you.
Mm-hmm.
You move right into the holiday season quickly, mm-hmm. revenue. What's the first month where you made money? Like after this mess?
Right. So,
I mean, you were close to closing the restaurant.
Absolutely. It was probably April or May. No, May or June that we really realized that there was a problem. There's an issue. Brought it up to my investors. Kind of figured out a plan by July, August. September came around. October came around, and all of a sudden, we made money. But at that point, we started making changes.
Did you ask your investors to put any more money in?
Yeah, I had to borrow more money. I mean, when I say there was no money left, there was no money left.
So
there was zero.
A guy losing money who got a shitty review, pardon my French,
yep.
now has the temerity to go back to investors and say, I need you to give me more money. They did, right?
And they did. They absolutely did. You know, at the end of the day, I think they knew my character, and the character of me is not to give up. I'm too dumb to give up. I want to win. I can't stand losing. I cannot stand it. I want to win. I want to win at everything. And, you know, they were bold enough. You know, they're already losing money, and there's a ton of money on the line. And they said, yeah, here's some more money.
No, that's not true. That was not, I recall the time you were going through it, and those were very, very thoughtful discussions that were going on. And the investors, as I recall you telling me, the investors really made you, you know, sort of make a real additional commitment that said, look, I'm going to, aside from all of the other duties I have to you, that I'm going to tell you that I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here every day. I'm not going to do other things, you know, until this ship gets righted.
Right.
And I'm going to do everything I can to get it righted.
Absolutely.
And then you had to go through a summer.
Yeah. And you know, that summer was tough. You know, summer is never easy. Summer is always tough. But, you know, like, if you look at last summer, honestly, last summer was the best time ever. I mean, we crushed it last summer. It makes no sense.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense.
Why is that?
And I'll tell you why. Because you just told us that you discovered the power of marketing.
That's true.
During that period of time. And you've told me on different occasions that your summer of 2013 was made by private bookings through events and conventions that came into Philadelphia who came to know you because you got yourself out there.
Well, let's be honest. I have a great manager who takes care of people. Bottom line, they book.
What's his name? Come on.
You know, Ben Fletcher. I mean, let's give him a shout out.
Ben Fletcher.
Ben handles it. I mean, he just handles it. They book because they know they're going to be taken care of. Bottom line, the food's going to be good. They're going to pay a fair price. They're going to have a great time. But at the end of the day, they can rely on Ben to take care of everything.
So that's a huge turning point. Hiring the right people, managing the labor costs, managing the food costs, cutting back on staff that would have made your life a little easier to live, right? But saying, I've got to make this work. And if it requires me to be the guy who changes the paper towels in the
absolutely,
you know, in the restrooms, I'm gonna do that. You gotta set aside your ego. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, you look at it, in the beginning we had 9 people on the line, whether it was a Monday or a Saturday. That doesn't work. You know, you walk in there now, there's 4 people, maybe 5 on a Monday, and there's 8 people on a Saturday, and that's it. And people have to bounce around. We're in the weeds a little bit more, but that's what we have to do.
Before I let you go, we're going to come back and next week and talk about what you're doing going forward. But right now, you know, I think the important way to finish it up for the audience, at the depths of your losses, how many months did it take to go from the bottom to profitability, and have you maintained that profitability and enhanced it since then?
Honestly, it took us about 3 to 4 months. That's it. It was a pretty quick turnaround, but a lot of those things were already working, and yeah, it's still profitable. Absolutely. That's why we're still open.
I mean, profitable.
And that's why I'm able to do more projects.
Not just profitable. You're distributing money to your investors, right?
Absolutely.
And they're thrilled and they want to talk to you about new projects?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know a single restaurant investor who wouldn't be heartened by, you know, this story. You know, who says, hey, I've backed a guy. Boy, it's looking bad. Boy, I guess this should kiss this goodbye. And then a couple of the investors said, well, before we just kiss it goodbye, you know, why don't we kick him in the ass? It won't hurt.
Right. Let's see what happens.
And you were open-minded enough to take the criticism and do some self-evaluation and make the moves.
Well, I knew what the issues were before I even told them that things were bad. Like, I already knew. So what they were telling me were things I already knew. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, it was like there was things I had to do.
Well,
I had to make the tough decisions.
You did. And I would tell you that it would have been an awful failure on a lot of levels for a lot of people, because you are an inspiring story to a lot of people. you know, where you, you know, the way that you grew up, the efforts that you made, to gain a foothold in the industry, you know, some of the more difficult times in your life mm-hmm. that you experienced, being unemployed,
mm-hmm.
Finding yourself on a television show that on any, you know, at any moment, you know, if you, you know, if you cooked your potato a minute too long, you know, you might not be there, you know, and then people have these giant expectations of you. And there's a moment in time when you're, you could have closed the door, you know. Somebody with less fortitude might have done that. But you didn't. Kevin Sprague didn't close the door. Kevin Sprague said, I'm going to do this myself, whether it kills me.
Keep on fighting.
Kevin, I hope you continue this great rise. We can come back next week and talk to us about the new projects that you're looking at now. I want to talk to you about some things that are a little off the chart. I've recognized that you've got a unique spot in the culinary pantheon here in the United States.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about that.
We need to touch on that.
We do. And we're going to do that next week. Right now, I want to thank you for being on the Business of the Business on the great Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Kevin, you're a good sport.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for having
thanks
me.
Thanks for talking about the painful stuff. We didn't even talk about the Phillies.
Can we have pizza?
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.